Okie dokes, so welcome to Qualified Tutor Conversations. We love having these conversations on Thursday because they push our thinking forward. Today we are talking about professional development in tutoring, and we've had a lot of people signed up to watch this event in LinkedIn, but Qualified Tutor members are here in the room. I just asked our lovely friend Sue here how she's doing, and she straight away told me how difficult it is to fit professional development into her schedule, and so it ends up getting shoehorned. So let's start with that, Sue. How do you get your professional development for tutoring? How?
I work quite a lot with students with SEN, and I'm fortunate enough that my daughter is an SEN teacher. So I managed to get hold of a lot of resources through her. And the most recent CPD I've done is a diploma in dyslexia. Prior to that, it was I did autism and ADHD. But quite often those resources are coming via courses recommended via the school that she works at.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you. And isn't that lovely that you've got a daughter to sort of bounce ideas off? That makes a big difference, doesn't it, to share those resources. Let's just go around the room and hear then, what is the most recent professional development that you engaged in? Is that all right? Yeah, Claire, go ahead.
No, don't do me first, I need to think.
Okay, Jan?
Yeah, I'm also thinking about it because I think professional development, I don't do anything really officially, but I'm trying to talk to a lot of tutors, kind of to exchange our ideas, how you try to improve your teaching. I think that's one of the big things I do. And also, yeah, for my own startup venture, I just try to learn a lot about how to develop a really good product for online tutoring. So I guess, yes, something I'm doing is not really official, like sign up to courses, etc., but more like connecting to people.
Awesome. Let me just clarify. When we talk about professional development, we don't necessarily mean anything certified. We mean the things that develop your skills, right? Your professional development is something that you are responsible for. And by articulating it, all we're doing is creating structures that enable us, encourage us, and help us to sort of get that material out there. So don't apologize. If it's reading, if it's talking, if it's listening to a podcast, it all counts as professional development. Journaling also counts as professional development, whatever it is that works for you. Rosanna?
Very, very similar to Jan, actually, in that it's not as formalized maybe as what other people are doing in terms of courses and stuff. But I'm very fortunate because a few of my personal contacts work in schools, and I find it really useful to talk to teachers and just say, what are some of the kind of things that you feel you're not able or don't have the capacity to address in schools, and where can tutoring supplement, or in some cases even maybe replace that, because the schools just do not have capacity for things like, for example, not so much teaching content, because I think they're as covered as they can be in that area, but certainly things like how to learn, I think are gaps that schools are just not able, through no fault of their own, to address. So having conversations with people in my personal network, I've got like family members and friends that are teachers in secondary schools, for example. So I talk with them regularly about what's going on, and trying to work with different agencies as well, and just seeing their different approaches and working out, you know, is this something that I think is actually useful in a practical way? And just seeing how it works on the ground is, I've found, incredibly useful for actually working out what counts and what I can do to help.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. So you're almost doing customer development conversations, aren't you? You're working out where your place is to supplement at the same time as learning what's happening in school. I scheduled this theme for this week because this is the week that the World Education Summit is running in. I'm pleased to have been able to contribute a presentation to it. And I found it immensely overwhelming. That program. I'm reassured because I'll be able to access it for the whole year. And so I'm going to be drip feeding myself the information. But I can share with you that the first presentation was with John Hattie, who created Visible Learning, which is a huge meta study of all the best evidence in what works well in education today. And he was really focusing on, we are very good at talking about teaching, but not so good at talking about learning. And so your point there about schools don't have capacity for learning, which is a balmy thing to say, right? Schools are a place of learning. They need capacity for learning. And I think one of the things that I want to touch on in this conversation is how do we make headspace for professional development? But we'll come back to it in a second. Sue, you told us about yours. Dee, would you like to tell us about yours? I think we know already. Some of us do.
Yes, I was introduced to SAM at Educators Coaching Academy. It was actually a while ago that I first found him on LinkedIn and went to something that he did. And then, of course, he did a QT thing 2 or 3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that and several conversations, I am now enrolled on his elite diploma course. We've had 3 sessions so far, and we've got the 4th on Saturday morning, 3 hours. So we'll be doing some coaching, we'll be being coached, as well as thinking about the competences that we're going to need to meet to get ICF accreditation eventually. I think I had some quite interesting CPD on Monday, because I had my first ever one-to-one coaching session being coached.
Okay.
And that was interesting, and I liken it to when I was learning to paint and to draw. I now had a real experience of what my students were experiencing, and the fear and the anxiety and all to do with, you know, trying to learn something new that you were convinced that you couldn't do it. So to be in a situation where I was being coached one-to-one for the first time was really interesting, because I had very much an ear on not just the question she was asking and how I was, you know, I was obviously answering those questions, and we did an amazing deep dive. I mean, it brought up some stuff that completely blew me out of the water. But I also had half an ear on how she was conducting the session, obviously, from a professional perspective, because I'm very much I like to have things modeled to me when I'm mm-hmm. learning new stuff. That's how mm-hmm. I do it. So to see a more, you know, an experienced coach me. I got 2 for the price of 1, I reckon.
That's really interesting. I think that point around modeling is really interesting. How many CPD sessions have you attended where the presenter will say, people have a 5-minute or a 10-minute or a 15-minute attention span, so don't talk longer than that, and then they go on to talk for the next 45 minutes. We see it again and again. Yeah. We see again and again teacher trainers who do not deliver effective teaching. We see business presentations that have spelling errors in them. And so I reckon that modeling effective CPD becomes part of it, right? So what does good look like in CPD is something that I'm always trying to consider. People do demos for us constantly about different tools that they want to put in front of tutors. And if the demo starts with what the admin side looks like, they're never going to get my attention, and I'm never going to be passionate about their tool, right? But we as educators know that you need a hook, you need to inspire people before you go into the nitty-gritty. So what good looks like in CPD is interesting, and what you're talking about, Dee, about having an eye on both the experience and the how of creating that experience is, I think, exactly right. And I think that's exactly what Sam's really good at, creating those really best practice modeling. And I hope we do that here in our back and forth as well. And that supportive environment. Holly, we've not heard from you yet. The question was, what is the most recent CPD that you've been involved in? Professional.
I guess I'm coming at this from a slightly different angle. I work for a client where I'm the head of tutor support, and I'm creating the CPD program now. So basically, I'm coming at it from a slightly different point of view from the person who's trying to create this program. So that's the most recent thing I've been involved in. This college that I'm working with has done CPD in the past. They've done more than I'd say a lot of colleges that I've seen them do. However, their tutor pool has grown by, I think we've tripled within the last 2 years. So essentially, it needs to be a lot more extensive. And we've been looking at kind of not only the kind of obvious things in terms of academic and how to develop them there, but also in terms of how to create this tutor community, which I think a lot of us in tutoring are in silos and we don't often connect with one another. So trying to create that community, even if people are online. So that's kind of the main work I've been involved in recently.
Holly, you're speaking our language, and I'd love to learn more about what you're doing, because that's exactly the problem that Qualified Tutor exists to solve. And I'd love to work with you on that.
Great.
Would you mind dropping your email into the chat?
Yeah, of course.
Hannah will capture it and we'll make a time to meet. Would that be all right?
Yeah, of course.
Fantastic. Jeff, Ruth, would you, any chance you could put your screens on? And Jenna, I understand that you can't put your screen on. If you want to answer the question in the chat, then please do so. Right, there's a few things that have come up from the, thank you. There's a few things that have come up from your first contributions. And one is accreditation. One is, does professional development need to be accredited? What would the benefits of accreditation be? And where? What are the limitations of accreditation? Rosanna, I know you've got opinions.
You read my mind. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's interesting to think about it in terms of pros and cons, because I think for pros, a lot of the time people want that official stamp on it, if you like. But in terms of the cons, they often don't necessarily think about the source of that. So going back to what you were talking about earlier about, if you've got somebody doing a business presentation, they've got spelling errors in it, for me, that undermines the credibility of what they're trying to teach me. Or similarly, I mean, I can relate this to my sales background as well, because before I was a tutor, I worked in sales. For me, like the demos that just went in and kind of talked at you rather than to you and didn't engage in a dialogue and a kind of collaborative learning process, for me, I just tune out, you know. So I learned from doing sales that the most effective thing you should do is kind of ask questions. So you know that classic thing that people do, they're like, sell me this pen. Immediately people just jump into, oh well, this pen is great, and have you thought about the cartridges that you can use, stuff like that. But the most effective way to deal with those kinds of things is to go, so why are you in the market for a pen? How long have you been in the market for it? So I think for me, like, just understanding that if I'm going to do more kind of accredited codified CPD, it has to be from a reputable source that can actually model good teaching, and then therefore I can be a good teacher. And a lot of that is about not just talking at someone, but listening and responding.
Fantastic. So you're suggesting that an accreditation would indicate reputability?
Reputability, yeah.
Good reputation.
Yeah, they're impressed by
and
it, yeah.
And that reputation would then be, would then indicate effective CPD.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a door opener, I think, in terms of people look and they think that this person's taking themselves seriously and that kind of thing. But like I say, to me, if it's genuinely good enough, it has to be coming from a good source, not just a name, if that makes sense.
Claire, you're nodding.
Yeah, I agree, really, because if accreditation sort of does bring up the standard, I guess, a bit more. Having said that, I've just done my own workshop. I don't think there are any spelling mistakes. but
and you need to check it for you if you want. She's the world's proofreader.
Oh, right, I'll remember that. But yeah, I think that going back to the whole accreditation CBT thing, it's, I don't even know what I'm trying to say. It's been one of those mornings.
Do you want me to come back to you?
I might need a nap or something.
My 16-year-old has got me a very nice chamomile tea. I'd recommend one of those.
Yeah, well, I got my crazy cat lady mug, so that's got my tea. But no, I think that if it's accredited, then yeah, I would feel more inclined that it was better or more valued.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the things I'm doing at the minute is looking at personally looking at a clinic, and it's looking at actually which ones and what am I looking for, and it is accreditations that I'm looking for when I'm choosing.
Yes, that's right. That's exactly.
So again, with a tutor, that's what I would expect people would be looking for, and I would be looking for in a course if I was.
Oh, very nice. So you just flipped it. Okay, so you flipped it now in two directions. So your client should be looking for accreditations with you. So yes. you should be able to say, these are the accreditations that I have covered in, for certainly for dyslexia, right? Anything that that is specialist and sensitive and complex, in order to be able to deliver work at that level, you would love to have an accreditation to be able to evidence it. And I think I do believe that online has created more and more need for accreditation, for robustness, because it's too easy to throw anything out there. Having said that, my eldest has just applied to do biomedical sciences. And he applied to all the best universities. We're really proud of him. He got a great place. But during that process, I discovered that the top universities do not accredit their degrees in biomedical science. Why? Because by the time the information goes up to become accredited and come back down again, it's already out of date. So the universities themselves rely on their own reputation to say, we're good enough, we accredit it. One of the places he applied was Oxford. So Oxford University's course, as I believe, is not accredited in biomedical sciences. And that's fine, because you know that if Oxford are delivering it, they're delivering it at a level. And the reason why it's not accredited is a really legitimate reason. Yeah. Equally, a podcast, a conversation, Jan's conversations with different tutors, those aren't accredited. And yet it could be the best learning you get. And so there's this sense of what is professional development? And in the same way, what is learning and what is education? Some training has accreditation and needs it, but then there's a structure to it. And then there's the mindset of professional development, which potentially is much, much looser, but can actually create just as much transformation. Dee, I want to call back to you for a second, because the other thing I notice about professional development that is structured and accredited is it feels a bit high stakes. And I know that, I hope you don't mind my sharing, when you started on the coaching course, it felt very big.
Yeah? Still does.
So is that helpful? Is that sort of seriousness? So I participated in a workshop that felt very big for me, a writing workshop, and I found it actually not helpful. It stressed me out way too much. What are your thoughts?
It's helpful for me because it helps me to focus. I've invested financially in it, not an insignificant amount of money, and I'm going to have to invest a significant amount of my time if I'm going to reap the rewards. So the way my brain works, that's great. And it's also very structured, which speaks to me very powerfully. I know exactly what's coming. And I've worked two competencies before I did. I had to do, when I first started teaching at the Met Office College, I had to do an NVQ in assessing NVQs. So okay. I had to meet a whole load of criteria. Yeah. So yeah. I had to produce evidence and all that kind of stuff. And I think I broke the record in getting the NVQ in NVQ assessing because it's the structure, the way it worked.
It worked for you.
It worked for me. So, yes, I'm still anxious about it. I'm in the community now where we're like QT, where experienced and qualified coaches are sharing their experiences with guys who've just started. And on the one hand, that is quite scary because you can see where it is you're trying to get to. But it is also, they're very encouraging as well. And I've now transitioned into that consciously incompetent part, which is possibly one of the scariest parts of that journey.
I know that feeling. So let's just unpack that for Dee, what Dee's talking about there. So if you've not heard that model before, you go from,
unconsciously incompetent. You don't know you don't know.
Yeah.
To consciously incompetent, you do know what you don't know. And then you get to consciously competent, where you can do it, but you've got to think really hard about doing it. And then you get to the unconsciously competent, where you do it without even having to think about it. That's right.
And the perfect example of that is learning to drive a car. So yes. My kids think it's easy to drive a car. They are unconsciously incompetent. They don't realize how little they know on the subject. My 16-year-old is just facing being able to start driving soon, and that terrifies him. So he's suddenly become conscious of how incompetent he is. Once he starts learning to drive, he will have that difficult process of that uncomfortable process of becoming consciously competent, mirror, signal, maneuver, right? And reminding himself what needs to happen. And then you get to automaticity, don't you? The consciously, unconsciously competent. And that's what you get with driving. I think it's a really interesting model because I actually think that we need to stay here in professional development. We need to remember how much more there is to learn. And the minute that we start getting complacent, we actually, let's say it the other way around. How does your professional development, and Jeff, would you mind if I call on you here? How does your professional development affect your outcomes for your students?
This thing about knowing how little you know is on my mind. I just finished a master's degree in inclusive education in August. And through the process of that year, it's really, especially because it's much more to do with like policy and law and that sort of thing. It's way more to do with like, oh, really, no one around the entire world knows what they're doing. No one has a good technique. It's different for everyone. So you just finish the degree being like, wow, I really know nothing and no one knows anything. And the only thing that we can really do is just try and put the students first. I think that's pretty much the only thing, because it's just what looks like good education is just so different for every single learner in every different context. It's different in London, it's different in Scotland, it's different in Nigeria. Do you know what I mean? I think that's really kind of it. It's just, if you're putting the students first, but it's anyone who thinks they've got it figured out is wrong by definition. So yeah.
I'm so glad I called on you for that, Jeff, because putting the students first is really, really important. Professional development that's not purposeful, that doesn't improve outcomes for your student, can become a massive distraction. And I know as a school leader, I was sometimes guilty of bringing shiny things into school, resources that my teachers did not need. And the best thing they could say to me at that time was, no, we don't need to change this maths resource. The one that we've got is perfectly fine. The children are fine with it. So Sue, you're smiling there. Does that resonate? Sue, are you?
Sorry, I was struggling to unmute.
Yeah.
It made me laugh because I can remember that part of the decision to leave the classroom came when I used to watch my head teacher shuffling, and he was lovely. My last head was absolutely fantastic, but he was shuffling, looking dejected, and I'd know he was going to say, "This is the next new thing," from the way, you know, from the look on his face. And he'd come in and say, we've got this new initiative and we're going to do whatever. And I would just look at him and go, that's great. How will it improve my children's learning experience? And if he could give me data and explain why it would improve their experience, then it would happen. But I can remember a particular occasion where he said, Ofsted likes to see the same vocabulary in each class in a year group. So we are going to come up with coordinated vocabulary. And I said, but we don't have coordinated children. You give me the ones that are really struggling. You give me the brightest ones. I've got no middle group at all. So why am I going to give them a homogenous vocabulary list that suits everyone? You will see where the children that are struggling are sitting, basic vocab, you know. There came a point when I thought, actually, I don't sit comfortably with any of this, because children are completely unique. And I think especially since lockdown, we're all seeing children, they've all got gaps, and they don't have the same gaps because schools delivered online learning differently. Children received it on different devices. And I think the job is infinitely harder than it was 5 years ago, but also infinitely more interesting.
Oh, what a positive approach. I really appreciate that. Infinitely more interesting. So the presentation that I've just done for the World Education Summit, they didn't want to hear about tutoring. They did want to hear about readiness for the future of education. And so I shared with them some ideas on the safe, skilled and supported model, and how if you exist in fight or flight, which many of us did in schools, if you exist in a state of perpetual anxiety, you are not in a headspace to take on new ideas. And so if you don't feel safe, you can't ask questions, you're worried that somebody's going to laugh at you or jump down your throat. If you are not willing to skill up, and if you don't feel supported in accessing those skills, then you will really struggle to take on those new ideas. And that curiosity that you've said, Sue, that on the one hand, it's complicated, but on the other hand, it's really interesting, is a really... it's a really helpful position to be in. Can I ask you, when you were in school and juggling all those different changes and different needs, were you able to see the interest, or was it too close?
Well, I think part of the reason for leaving was I decided I wasn't going to juggle those things. I wasn't going to do, and quite often, you know, just preposterous things. My daughter, one at the school that she worked in, decided that to engage girls in maths, they were going to have pink maths boards because girls like pink. You know, I think if you can't question and just say no,
Jeff Carpenter, we need you on that one. Go on.
So to some degree, it got to the stage where I was doing less juggling. I was just ignoring still delivering what I thought was appropriate for my class. And that sits uncomfortably when you do respect the people that are asking you to jump through these hoops, but you're just saying, no, I won't be doing that. I had a bit of a reputation for liking the quirky ones. So I would get the quirky ones. So yes, I did find it interesting in the classroom.
That is just fantastic. And also that uncomfortable position you're in, where you respect the person, but not necessarily the new initiative that they're bringing in, does create tension. Jeff, the reason why I used your name just then was that pink boards for getting girls interested in maths is certainly not inclusive behavior, is it? It's just reinforcing stereotypes.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean... It could be inclusive. I mean, if it came from the girls themselves.
Oh,
so
nice.
if the girls club together or whoever and was like, well, we just really want a big pink and we're obsessed with, I don't know, unicorns and Barbie, and we really want that on the maths thing. And that was very much from them and part of their learning experience, then it could be inclusive. So right. I don't know.
That's
and
fantastic.
The thing.
You.
I think it what I think the other big thing that, that they tried to ram down our throats at the master's degree, because it is a very biased programme, but that's sort of good in a way when it's such a huge issue, is that inclusion is a process. So again, it's this idea that you don't see, we've done it, guys, we're inclusive now, here's the inclusion certificate, right. We'll put that on the desk at reception. It's an ongoing discussion, conversation back and forth with the students, you know, as time goes on. I think that's really true, you know.
And I think Holly agrees with you.
Well, every year that, you know, you talk to any teacher at any school, they'll be like, oh, year nines this year, they're a real handful, aren't they? I find the boys in year 10, they're so quiet. It's every even year group has its own kind of identity. So the way that those particular students are going to feel included, or, you know, is going to be different for everyone. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, Holly, I'm coming to you right now. One of the things that I learned very quickly in inclusive practice is that it's a very personal experience of holding your mind open to lots of different ways of working. And in itself is quite exhausting, the idea that there's no one right way and that you have to find
it is exhausting. I agree. It's frightening.
It's frightening, but it's the same thing
with my undergrad degree. You finish the degree being like, oh, okay, wow, I know nothing. Like, you spend 3 years just learning how vast the topic is and how you'll it's literally impossible for anyone to have a handle on it, but you just do your best, you know. It's a humbling experience, I think.
It's a humbling experience.
Absolutely.
But it always leaves you on the back foot. Jenna, you're bringing some awesome things that I'm going to call on in a second, but Holly, go ahead.
No, I was just laughing along because I guess I've seen this from both perspectives. I've seen this from a staff member perspective, and I've also seen this from being someone who's a little neurospicy in the classroom. And it's something that I've seen on both sides. And the comment I got a lot, because I guess when I was growing, so just putting it all out there, dyslexic, dyspraxic and autistic. And essentially I was, I guess the word isn't any more high functioning, but I guess that's how I was seen in the classroom, in the sense that I was quite able to cope. I was doing okay academically, but I knew I wasn't hitting my full potential, and that was really annoying to me. And the comment I kept getting from teachers was, she's smart enough. You don't need to worry. You're fine. You're getting B's. You're fine. What are you worrying about? And I was like, no, but I'm working really hard and I should be getting A stars, and there's something stopping me. And after I did my GCSEs, my mum basically came into the school and went, told you. And then I got diagnosed. And that's when that finally happened. So I guess it's come a long way, but there's still a long way to go. And even in the school that I used to go to, I've actually recently revisited, and they've done so much to develop that kind of descend side of things at the school. I guess there's still a lot more work to do, and I don't think we'll ever stop kind of working on it. And I think if anyone thinks that there's an end point, there will always be something more to develop on, and there'll always be something to improve on. So for me, it's a continuous process. It's never going to end.
I think that's beautiful. And I think if you don't mind, as well as suggesting that it's a continuous journey of improvement and inclusivity, I would love it also to widen out, so that the concept of providing, you know, we were talking about professional development, weren't we? And we started off with Sue's example of dyslexia training, Sue, that you mentioned that you had participated in. So, but actually every student in the classroom would benefit from inclusive practice, and every student in the classroom would benefit from the kind of approach that sends students, you know, is focused on sends students. And actually, really, every single student needs that kind of personalized learning, which is what we do here, right? That's why we left the classroom and went into tutoring, because we found that we were able to really tailor the learning. But Jenna's brought something really important, this is the right time in the conversation to talk about it. The point of professional development is to improve, the point of our professional development is to improve outcomes for our students. Otherwise we would just read the newspaper or, you know, do needlework, right? The reason why we do, why we take the time to develop ourselves as professionals is to prove out outcomes for our students. But the word outcome is much, much broader than exam results. And it's certainly much broader than GCSE exam results in English. We're actually looking for the spillover effect that improving outcomes in exams will have for a child in terms of boosting confidence and unlocking doors. We're also looking for the outcomes of that experience of having a trusted adult that you can work with, that you can speak with. We certainly knew that in COVID, those one-to-one tutoring sessions that children were having tended to be the best speech and language that was happening in their lives when we were living in isolation. So what are your thoughts about how your professional development, and Dee, certainly your coaching work comes straight into that, doesn't it? How the professional development that you engage in improves life outcomes for the child. And I just want to drop a seed in there. My strong feeling is it actually improves outcomes for families. And of course, it boosts results in schools as well. So I, as you know, believe that tutoring changes, the ripple effect of tutoring is much, much more powerful than any of us have recognized yet. Go ahead, Dee.
One of the most valued pieces of feedback, the bit that when things are dark and horrid that I cling on to, is some feedback from a parent, an in-person tutee. I don't have too many of those. And she thanked me. She said, you know, obviously you've made a difference to her maths, but I just want to say thank you for the difference you've made to her and her attitude to being in school, to her learning, how she's coping with the anxiety of the revision and the exams. and everything else. And I see her fairly regularly. She works locally. I bump into her regularly. I get an update on how she's doing at college. And it gives me such joy to see that she is flourishing. And I know that I've made a difference. I could see what she was like, and the fears that she had, and the anxieties that she had, and the doubts that she had. And I think I have made a contribution to her developing enough, overcoming some of those, to be doing now what is truly filling her cup. She's at catering college and she is just flying, and it's an absolute joy, an absolute joy. And if I've made just that one little difference to her to enable her to be able to do that, the mass results, yeah, great. But it's all the other impacts. You're right. This ripple effect is just extraordinary.
That's right.
Coaching, but we'll do exactly right. The same thing.
So tell me about the coaching now, because what you've done is you've actually retrofitted coaching, haven't you? You've said, oh, look, I sort of do coach my students. They really do benefit from it. So let's get some structure around that approach.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I already had a sense that I wasn't sure if I was coaching or mentoring or what it was that I was doing. Seeing being the sessions that Jack has run, and all sorts of things that I've done through QT have opened my eyes to I'm kind of doing bits of this already. I was kind of unconsciously mm-hmm. knowing I was doing these bits without being able to pin down what was good about it, and therefore being able to develop it. So I needed someone to show me, actually, yes, this is good, this is not so good.
So it's almost like the professional development rearticulated and clarified what you were already doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that right? Okay, question for you. You have limited hours in your day and you need to choose what professional development to engage in. And from the many tutors that I know, I can tell you that many of us suffer from FOMO. And really, we want to do plenty of everything. And every recording that's ever done, we want to watch it back again. But some things are a must have, and some things are a should have, and some things are a we could do without. So what are the must haves in professional development for you? And how do you choose? Go ahead, Sue.
I think I've recently started giving parents like a satisfaction survey.
Mm.
And I think probably for me, the most important thing is looking at the issues that come from that. So it's about, see, I'm probably quite an unusual tutor in that I started life with a very definite direction that I was going in. And I know that if, you know, there are lots of tutors who probably do a far better job than I do, who just tutor maths or just tutor English. But I'm a bit of a butterfly brain and I do get bored very easily. So as well as having my GCSE students, I also have quite small students. And I think for me, the most important thing is actually getting in touch with the whole gaps thing. Because I had, when COVID started, I can remember saying to parents who were very worried, I don't think you need to worry about this. You know, if they miss 6 weeks of school, it's not the end of the world. We'll have to adapt the curriculum. There'll be 6 weeks of learning. So if they don't know Roman numerals or frontage, who cares?
But those are the two classic examples that get thrown around in primary teaching.
Yeah.
And that's for good reason, because those two examples don't sit in a spiral. Those are two standalone topics, Roman numerals and frontage adverbials, aren't they?
Well, I think the English, if I'm completely honest, I'm going to put it out there and say I think the English curriculum is totally unfit for purpose. I see children, you know, I'm tutoring 16-year-olds who can't write structured sentences but can tell you what a determiner is. What's the point?
What is the point? Absolutely right.
So
Holly and Claire, you
know, I'd like to see the whole English curriculum rewritten. I'm not entirely. Yeah. I mean, I think the maths secondary curriculum. Well, the maths curriculum is not fit for purpose either, is it? We send children out that are functionally innumerate, but again,
right?
They can tell you how to calculate the area of a cube. Who cares? What? Right. Why are they going to use stem and leaf? So, I think, which certainly sidetracked a little bit.
Curriculum is one of those subjects.
Post COVID, I think it's about understanding how that. For me, what I'm really interested in is how you plug gaps, because it wasn't the 6 weeks, was it? It just went on and on and on, and then when they came back, we're still seeing schools locally where the children have substitute teachers.
Yeah, like you've seen the K model, haven't you? Where the gap is actually widening.
And I think it's, for me, it's looking at a 16-year-old and working out how to plug gaps that really came from 4 or 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So keeping that at level for a 16-year-old, so they're not being patronised.
So what I'm hearing from you, Sue, and I think Jeff's just said the same thing, and Jan also in the chat, is using feedback from students or what you're reading from the students need to inform your professional development, and going out and finding answers to the questions once they arise, and actually being really proactive and finding out where the gaps are. So that makes a lot of sense to me. Who wants to dive in here? Because I had a... Yes, Jenna, that's exactly what I was going to do next. Jenna, go ahead. Sorry, Sue, I lost my thread for a second there. Go ahead, Jenna.
Apologies again for the lack of camera.
That's all right. Inclusive practice.
I guess I feel a little bit frustrated by this conversation. Why does it have to be such a direct link? Why can't I do something, excuse the language, for the shits and giggles? Like, right. 90% of my CPD is because I find my subjects fascinating, and I teach pretty much every single subject because it's interesting. And to me, so I'm autistic, I have ADHD, I'm thoroughly neurospicy, and jargon term special interest, my main one is education outside of traditional classrooms. And one of the reasons I'm good at what I do, and one of the reasons why I can work with and get results out of some of the hardest to reach young people, in terms of the young people that have thoroughly been unable to access education in lots of different ways, is because I do random things, and I do random CPD that no one might think of it as CPD, and sometimes I don't think of it as CPD in the moment, but actually the fact that I went and did a woodworking course actually made me have a massive breakthrough with a young person that has been out of education for years and hasn't been able to engage with tutoring before. Because I have a personal interest in video game design, that comes into my classroom, and I do these things genuinely for fun, and I do my Sudokus and stuff, and that's coming into the classroom too. These things, who we are as people, informs everything, and opening up. And when it's one of the things I hate about working in classrooms is this idea that you can't be a human being, you don't have a life outside that classroom, you have to be this sterile being. None of that is fair to anyone. And none of that is possible. And the point of tutoring is to be a person with another person. And I feel like this focus on, oh, well, it has to be connected to something I've experienced or a question I've had or a gap that I feel is there. It doesn't have to be. That's absolutely a really, really useful thing, and definitely something that's helpful and genuinely makes us better educators. But also, so does being genuinely interested in what we're doing, how we're doing it, and why we're doing it. And just to really quickly add on to how I do that and how I don't get quite so lost and overwhelmed by just how much I want to know, because unfortunately I can never know everything as much as I am desperate to. There are three things. One is always asking why and how. Why is something the way it is? How is it that way? Why is somebody learning this or not learning this in this way? All of that stuff, anything, just everything has a why. Be that three-year-old toddler asking why everything, right? The other thing is something, a project that I run called Curiosities and Conundrums, where you just go down those rabbit holes. You spend 20 minutes going down and Googling the most random things that you've always wanted to. And kind of attached to that is something that I have with every student and I maintain for myself, is a commonplace book. A commonplace book is kind of like a rough book, and one of my students calls it their permanent whiteboard, because it's that book that you notepad that you have on your phone or that you stuff into your pocket. I'm very much more of a physical person, so for me it's a little notebook that I always have on my person that I write down any question or idea or anything about anything that comes into my brain, and I have a section in there that's specifically for questions, and my students do this too. And at the moment we're rolling out a project that's actually about to open up to not just young people I'm already working with, where every week we sit down and run a group called Curiosities and Conundrums, where we share it with each other and we just chat. And really, that's the basis of learning. That's the basis.
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. You're reminding me of my 11-year-old who watches explainer videos on YouTube constantly. Yeah.
And yeah. On podcasts too. I can't not. And most of my TikTok feed is that too.
Because my 11-year-old listens to Shower Thoughts,
yes,
which is a fantastic podcast. I'm coming to you next, Holly. Jenna, I think you always do this for us, and I really appreciate you. You push the boundaries outwards for us, and I think it's really, really important. Of course, professional development is a mindset, and of course, modeling curiosity is just the best, the absolute best. And the best thing we can do for students. So the fact that you are this through and through lifelong learner, it's infectious, actually. And then you create it into a project that other people can sort of pick up and understand and roll with, I think is really, really helpful. It comes back to that idea of what structures do you need for professional development, and do you need any structures at all? Is it totally free fall or is it not? And I think that very much comes down to who you are as a person. So Dee loves a structured coaching course, and Jenna loves a notebook and curiosity and conundrums. Holly, and then Pelham, and then we're going to wrap up. Go ahead.
I guess I'm just seconding what Jenna said. I totally feel the same way, that things feed into each other more than you know. I mean, for me personally, I've got a really mixed background. I started off life as an EYFS teacher. My EYFS teaching helps me now with HR, because managing staff is not dissimilar to managing toddlers. And then, you know, also going forward, my EYFS helped me with tutoring my A-levels, and then my A-level stuff helped me with education. And it just kind of, it all has kind of fed in together. And I couldn't agree more, in the sense that the more you learn, the more you have to kind of embed within other things. And if this kind of, like, I guess, cross subject learning is I think even more important as an adult, but actually our students as well should be encouraged to do it as well.
Mm-hmm. I think that's absolutely right, Holly. And I also think that my favorite place to be is the early years also. And the reason for that is that there is so much free flow, isn't there? And so much provocation, you know, inspiring curiosity. So that's much closer aligned to the way we need to live than key stage 2, 3, 4, and 5. Pelham, go ahead. Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Firstly, I want to greet all of you. And this is the first time that I am joining such a panel. And these events are very important for professional development, I understand. Now I want to introduce a little myself. I joined you not to partake as you are partaking, but just as a listener. This is the first time I am joining such a panel. I am a math tutor, Pëllum Klogjeri. I am from Albania, and I have not had the opportunity to join you other times because there are difficulties related to...
Helen, I'm so sorry. I'm going to interrupt you now. We are just wrapping up a conversation on professional development. I'll be very happy to meet with you afterwards and have a conversation and discussion. If there was something that you wanted to share with us about your insights about professional development and tutoring, I would love to hear that now.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
So I am a math tutor and I have started to tutor students. So I am committed to online tutoring.
Yes.
And this has started by the COVID situation that we had throughout the world.
Mm-hmm.
But I appreciate very much the online tutoring because there are many benefits, like the time, the money, the travel, and other things. And it is so easy to organize the tutoring of the students to do it very well.
Yes.
In mathematics, for example, I want to share just a very few things that I have. I am tutoring students from different countries in mathematics mm-hmm. and in universities also, and in the high school. And the online tutoring provides many benefits for the students because.
Helen, I'm so sorry. I'm going to interrupt you. I have 5 minutes left for this discussion. Mm-hmm. And the conversation at the moment is just wrapping up around professional development. I would be happy to speak with you more about the benefits of online tutoring. So I'm going to just capture a moment here, if you guys wouldn't mind, to wrap up this theme that we've just explored. And I'm so sorry that I interrupted you, but really I do
no have problem.
Minutes. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you very much for...
I appreciate that you managed to make it this time because I know we've had a few emails on the subject. Okay. My friends, what we've done is we've explored professional development for tutors. And the nicest thing about this conversation was the assumption that it's a good idea. And that hasn't always been the case. There are many... we all know that tutor training did not exist as it does now years ago. Georgina Green often tells me, I didn't know what good looked like, you know, and then we started talking about professional development and it's not just, you know, as you'll know, in my course, the Foundations of Effective Tutoring covers the basics of what pedagogy looks like, but really we've gone into niches now. We've looked at inclusive practice, we've looked at SEND practice, we've looked at coaching. We've not looked very much at the actual subjects and learning how to teach those better. I know that MathsConf is a very well-established resource for finding out about teaching maths. I know that Anna Martin is involved in a group that delivers professional development for delivering Latin and classics. And so there are these niches where we're all able to develop our own thinking and skills around the tutoring that we do. I think it's useful to think about the niches that we develop and how we build out our expertise based on what our students need. And then that sort of becomes our identity, doesn't it? It becomes our unconscious practice. And I think that this understanding that not all training needs to be accredited, but accreditation is useful because there's a certain amount of quality assurance. And to pull back to what Dee and Jenna have both said is that modeling professional development. So the doing of it, but also the noticing of it and the mindset of professional development is really who we want to be. It's those lifelong learners. So in the last minute that we have together, I will share with you some of the professional development that's coming up in Qualified Tutor. But I do want to make you aware that our wonderful Hannah is determined to make as much professional development experiences visible to tutors as possible. So her newsletter that she sends out on a Monday of opportunities for tutors goes way beyond what Qualified Tutor offers because there's so much out there and nobody can fill all the needs. But if you join us on Wednesdays, you will be able to participate in supervision circles. Supervision circles are starting on the 3rd of April and they are a safe place for you to debrief on your tutoring experiences. If you have a stressful experience, if you have a difficult experience, if you have a wonderful experience, you need somewhere to share that with. So it's, on the one hand, it's a safe space, a staff room, which is, you know, who we always are, but it's more than that because it's coaching and it's professional development. The concept of supervision is borrowed from mental health practice, because we take on so much from our students, it's important to have a chance to debrief. Those events are free for qualified tutor members. You can participate fortnightly. There are only 12 places available in every meeting, so please do book your place. If you want to participate and you're not yet a member, you can sign up also. It's a paid event. Tutoring Business Club is an opportunity for us to develop our business practice. So that professional development takes you out of the education headspace and into the business headspace. And yet we are always showing up as educators. The first session will be on the 2nd of April, and it will be talking about how to work with schools, how to build programs that schools want to buy, how to communicate effectively with schools, how to open doors in schools. And what we'll be doing is learning from each other, because that is, in our opinion, is the most exciting way, the peer development. There's also, of course, these sessions every Wednesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. QT conversations are a chance for us to share ideas and push the boat forward together. And finally, on alternate Wednesdays with supervision circles, we run coaching sessions that are specific to different topics. This week we had financial advice, and next week we have tax support. So thank you so much for participating, because the more we show up together, the more we learn and the more our students will benefit. I will thank you so much for remembering to bring your whole selves here. I find it helpful, and I hope you do as well. Claire, thank you. Thank you, Dee. Thank you, Sue. Thank you, Jeff. Pelham, I'll be staying in this meeting if you would like to talk with me. You're very welcome to. Thank you, Holly. See you, Rosanna. Thank you. And Jenna, I hope you're well. Keep well. Bye, guys.